Hi, welcome back to Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. Here's your host, Eric Hart.
And Ashley Flowers. We are back this week with Natalie Kearns.
Hello.
Last week we talked a lot about where you have worked in the past, going from Canada to Boston to London for a bit and all that jazz.
Now in the Canadian London.
Yeah, exactly. The Canadian London as well.
Googling real complicated. Get a lot of emails like, hey, how close to, you know, Birmingham are you? It's like, there's no Birmingham here.
Cross the sea, people.
Yeah. Wrong London.
Now this week we're going to kind of switch gears completely in a topic that we've never discussed on this episode, and that's mental illness in the theater world. Mm-hmm. I myself have bipolar, so I know there's been multiple moments in my life that I have encountered situations that had to be handled in ways that could have been better if other people understood more of what bipolar was, mm-hmm. or could have been better in ways of I needed to educate myself on how to cope with these certain situations mm-hmm. to succeed in the theater world, because it's stressful, it's insane, it's triggering. let's jump in and kind of talk a little bit of how your mental illness has affected, has helped, and where it kind of all began and how you first saw it in the theater world and affecting it.
Yeah, so I was sort of inspired to talk more about this by an actor who I've worked with in Canada, was recently had a really amazing blog post about his own struggles with mental illness and his desire to be more open about it, despite the fear that, like, you know, casting directors and stage managers and whoever might see this and say, like, we don't want to take on that burden, you know, mm-hmm. Which is obviously not fair to someone, especially someone so incredibly talented as he is. So I read this article and was like, okay, I feel like I should be more open about this. So I, basically from the womb, have been a clinically anxious person. Sort of first big issues popping up at age 3 and 4, first, you know, sort of therapy and trying to figure out why I was, you know, panicking and refusing to go to kindergarten or pre-kindergarten and why everything was so intense for mm-hmm. me. Was in and out of child therapists from 4, was clinically diagnosed, I think, with generalized anxiety at like 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. And then was medicated for the first time when I was 9. I grew up hating change and hating transitions, and which is, you know, sort of the antithesis of the theater world. Going to somebody's birthday party was a huge ordeal. Like, it was, you know, crying and throwing up in my parents' car, having them walk in with me, get settled, then they could go. But it was like a cycle of every time. So, being medicated was hugely helpful, and it was sort of like my, there were times as a kid I thought, I'm never going to move out of my parents' house. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to, you know, be able to do anything because they can't even drop me at a bus to go on a field trip. Like, mm-hmm. my parents chaperoned every field trip I ever went on, you know. And so sort of I am someone when I meet people that are, you know, just in their lowest lows and are like, I don't want to be medicated. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. you know, for me, it changed my life so drastically at such a young age. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in grade 8, I was able to go on a school trip to Washington, D.C. without my parents chaperoning. And that was like the biggest success. It was like the first time I thought, oh, I might be able to go to college, you know. So it was something that I've dealt with for literally my entire life. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it has been that I am somebody who needs to know all potential outcomes and who needs to be fully in control of everything that I do. So I, from, you know, a young age was somebody who liked to know all the facts about something, mm-hmm. which has been to my detriment and to my success. You know, I'm the person that when you travel, like, has already downloaded all the maps onto their phone and researched all the places. Mm-hmm. And I go with people like, wow, we got so much done. This trip would have been us wandering around lost if you weren't here. And I'm like, well, I wouldn't have made it on this trip unless I did all of these things. So But for me, a place where I found people that, you know, had the same sort of manic energy and sort of a place where I was comfortable was always with creativity. And I was a very crafty kid. And I was a kid, you know, who frankly, like sometimes I didn't go to sleepaway camp or I didn't, you know, do something. So I spent a lot of time like imagining and playing and making up things and visualizing things that I was too scared to do in the real world, but like I could, you know, act them out. So it was very like creativity was very important to me as something to do. So when I got into theater in grade six, like it was an environment that for some reason, the like absolute chaos and uncertainty was manageable. And also like me being on crew and being involved in the process, like I was getting all of the information and sort of, and learning to anticipate where problems were and there was an end date in sight and it was safe. And I felt like this is a place that I have no control in some way where I can like use my skills of that, like over researching, over analyzing, trying to imagine all the outcomes, like frankly, to success. So to this day, I still am like, why? Like on paper, props is really probably the least amount of like type A being in control of every, like, cause you've got people giving you all sorts of information of like, I needed to do this. I needed to look like this. I needed to jump on it. I need to tap dance on it. But, somehow I ended up in it, weirdly enough.
I often hear other departments when they see like the pages and pages of prop notes for rehearsal reports, it gives them like anxiety thinking about it. So it's
for
interesting
that
actually is what you're seeking.
Yeah, it's, and you know, like that is the one of the things that I've learned is like, I have a really, it's a catch 22 of, I'm somebody who lies in bed and looks at their phone, whether or not that they say you should do that, you know, right? So it'll be 10:30, 11, and I'll look at my email, my work emails on my phone, and a rehearsal report will come through. And it's like, do I want to look at this because either I'm going to bed with an unknown and I'm not stressing if there are 20 notes on there or I'm opening it and now I know what my day tomorrow looks like, whether it's stressful or not. So it's like these weird time bombs in my inbox. It's like some nights I choose not to open it. And some nights I open it and it's like, okay, now I know what tomorrow looks like and I can sleep.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know which one.
Yeah. That's for me, the unknown and the quiet makes me extremely anxious.
Yes.
You give me a million things to do. I'm running around with my head cut off. That's prime time for me. That is when I am like, go, 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 succeed. The moment there is quiet time, there is downtime, I get anxious and overwhelmed. And I'm like, oh my gosh, something's wrong. I need to do something.
And that was part of why I knew personally that there was no way, I was going to be a designer. Because that's like, you're moving all over the place. You're going to new places. You're meeting new people. You're working in new things. You're going through the transition every other week kind of thing. And it's why I knew I couldn't freelance in props forever. Like, it was okay. And it was so crazy that I didn't have time to be anxious about it, but it was sort of like, I need to sit and be on staff somewhere because I know for me personally, like it's still difficult to go at the end of the season to the layoff. The first couple of weeks, I'm really like, okay. And then really it's the weeks leading back into going back into work. It's like, here's the big shift in my pattern. And this I know is going to be hard and it will all, like, it's sort of like, I'll wake up. I'm like, why do I feel so anxious? And then it's like, look at the calendar. It's like, oh, it's because you like start back to work in a week and your body's like, hey, I know that mentally, you know, that this is like the same as it is every year, but man, your stomach feels weird. All right. And it was like that, you know, going back to school every year.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that. Just like I've gone from summer back to school. And for me, that was huge.
Has there been a project or a position in general that your anxiety prevented you from actually completing that? And how was that handled? How did you cope with it? How would you have handled it now versus then?
Yeah. So I had a huge learning curve, So when I graduated from Emerson, I actually, at the recommendation of a professor, interviewed for a summer stock that was based out of a university in a fairly rural setting. And I had that interview for head of props. It was like me and an intern, so somebody who was still in college. So like, you know, I was 22. I think the intern was 19. It wasn't like a, which is one thing I was like, okay, I don't know if I'm like qualified to teach somebody who's literally like 3 years younger than me, but you know, more on that later. and I was very clear, like, oh, I'm going to get dropped off at this place. I don't have my own car. And they were like, it's fine. There's production vehicles. Like, we'll, you know, we'll give you what you need. And I was like, okay. So I went up to this place. I was living in a university dorm. Sort of week one, I got there. It was me and stage management, the TD, and the apprentices, the interns. And I quickly found out that I knew no one there, which was like, okay, I've gone from university where you like know everybody, or like from freelancing where I had the support of the university, to like a place. I don't know what the rules of the shop are. I don't know where to buy anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of these people, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the bomb got dropped that the production vehicles we had to take a driving test for through the university. But they didn't want to administer that until everybody who was going to need the vehicles was going to be there, which was like another 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was getting rehearsal reports and stage managers coming in and like, we need all these things for first rehearsal. And I was trapped in the middle of nowhere with an intern staring at me, people asking for stuff who, you know, came from these prestigious places that I was scared of, and all these professionals. And I just, I was waking up and like, I was physically unable to leave the room. Mm-hmm. Like I was sobbing, I was sick, I couldn't eat. I was terrified. I was telling my apprentice, I was sick, don't come in today, because I couldn't, like, I couldn't even think. I was trying to go down to this classroom that was our prop shop, trying to figure out with these shop supervisors, what tools I was allowed to use. I had no, I'm somebody who loves to know the rules and the boundaries, and I had no information. And it got so bad so quickly that I was just calling home and sobbing, and was like, was telling other people I was sick and I couldn't work, but was like begging my parents to come pick me up, like my 5-year-old self, and was like, I can't do this. So finally, like, and I was mortified. I was so embarrassed. Uh-huh. I couldn't, and I was like, I physically cannot tell this person that I'm leaving, like this TD. And so I made my parents call him, which like, you know, was mortifying. Mm-hmm. And stayed in my room, and my dad came pick me up in the middle of the night, and we drove back, and I to Boston, and I said like, okay, I'm going to figure out what went wrong here. And I think it's pretty clear what went wrong there. And another person could have dealt with that. But I know that I cannot deal with that. To the point that this summer, I went to work somewhere that was far away from where I am in London. And the theater was like, oh, we'll fly you out. And I said, no, I know how this works. I'm driving out, so I have my own car. Mm-hmm. So that I don't have to negotiate, because I know myself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, this will be a disaster. So can you give me the equivalent of the flight? I'll put it towards gas, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, sure, fine. And I did it this summer. And frankly, I know that I would have been, I mean, I was anxious just being in a new place by virtue of that. Mm-hmm. And I know that it would have been a mess. Mm-hmm. So I know those things about myself now. I know when I go to a new place or I get offered something, the questions to ask, because if I don't have certain resources, I know that I will be mentally unable to do the job. Mm-hmm. And one of those is like control over my own transportation.
Right.
Yeah. You know, like Amazon could only deliver so much to the woods.
And I think that's so important, learning about what you need, because like you just said, if you don't know what you need, you're kind of setting yourself up to fail.
For sure. And the other thing I learned is so this TV, you know, I was in the car and I'm like mortified. I'm crying on the way home. And my dad said to me, like, he said it was going to be fine. There's somebody local who's helped with this before. They'll bring them in, you know, whatever. Like, people get cancer in the middle of a job contract and people are like, how dare you leave? Like, whatever. It's a health thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're leaving for health reasons. So years later, through spam, I went to the Kennedy Center American Theater Festival region in New England to be an adjudicator and a props representative. Mm-hmm. And this guy, because I was at a university, is part of that. And he remembered me. And he was like, yeah, whatever. It was no big deal. Like, the shows happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The shows happened. And that was the whole point of this. This guy whose article I read was like, you know what? Like, as much as theater, it's like that, the show must go on. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, worst case scenario, the show gets canceled, but like, it's not heart surgery. Like, you're not there as part of a cog that if you jump out of the line of cogs, like, we're gonna have nuclear war. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like, if you have to go, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I've recently learned that we make it seem that it was worse than what it was. And to them, they were like, oh no, it's fine. I understand. You gotta take care of yourself. But in my mind, I'm like, I just ruined my career.
Right.
I and that's done. What I was I'm like, never going to work.
Yeah. It was a professor that vouched for me who knew this guy through KCACTF. I still worked for both of them and with both of them. So, or, you know, whether through KCACTF or through another show. So I worked with both of them after that. You know, it wasn't like, but I mean, it really did feel like it was like a shameful blot on my resume. Like, it was like, if I, well, I mean, I didn't put it on my resume because I didn't do any work, but it was sort of like, it was like, what were you doing in the summer of 09 or 08? I was like, well, I was crying in my bedroom. But you know, yeah, it was like, you know, people find out a week before that one of their apprentices got a better gig and they move up. Like, people drop contracts for reasons all the time. And frankly, I think I had a pretty good reason, you know, like, and people, you know, people drop stuff for much more and maybe that's a blemish, but for me, it was like, it was getting to that point. It was like, okay, it was fine. Mm-hmm. Those shows happened. Those shows opened.
Exactly. It's not the end of the world.
It's not the end of the world.
But our brains are telling us that it is.
Oh, yeah. That was like a, you know, a 10-year realization process. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay.
But at the same time, do you think there are aspects of working in theater where people don't understand and aren't doing things to support mental health as much as they support physical health?
For sure. Yeah. Like, we make great accommodations for an actor who shows up with half of a voice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we bend over backwards. We make them throat coat. We give them lozenges. Mm-hmm. We bring them tea. We set up extra water stations backstage. We get this freezy spray, which I apparently need. All of that jazz. And, but yet if that same actor walked in and they are having an anxious morning, like, I know personally, I would hide that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go to the stage manager and say, like, just so you know, I'm having a really off day. So if I'm quietly sitting in the corner, like, instead of running my lines, that's why, like, I'm meditating or I'm, or if I suddenly run out of the room, it's because I'm nauseous. Mm-hmm. Like, and I need to go and breathe in somewhere for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. I would never tell them that.
Yeah.
Right? Versus if I walked in with laryngitis and I was expected to perform, same problem, but I'm like, oh, well, I need my throat coat, you know, whatever, you know. So, like, yeah, I don't think we treat it in the same way. And the times that I have said, I just want you to know, like, I'm not feeling right today. It's, like, said through, like, biting my tongue to keep from crying.
Yeah.
Because it feels incredibly shameful. Mm-hmm. And I tell myself, I'm like, and anytime I have said it, people have said, like, oh my God, I get it. Like, you know,
really understand
whether it's hormones or mental illness or whatever. Like, I'm not my best XYZ day and I don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
But if I'm physically not my best, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. You better get that knee brace on me. Like, or whatever.
Yeah. I feel that when someone is anxious or mentally unable to handle a situation in a specific time and needs to step away, we tell ourselves, oh, we're being weak. We're failing at the job. We're not doing it properly. Mm-hmm. And because it's a mental thing and it's something you can't just take, you know, a hot tea to calm it down sometimes like you would with a throat. Mm-hmm. You know, it might take a longer meditation moment to do. I think kind of triggers ourselves into thinking, you know, why we can't say.
Yeah. But I, you know, at the same time, it's like there are, if we could be more open about it, there certainly are accommodations that can be made like, you know, again, I mean, I use the example of actors because they're expected to do this publicly, right? Mm-hmm. And that's such a vulnerable thing. And they're expected to, like, you know, go places and display emotions, whatever, you know? So, like, if the accommodation for a sore throat is, you know, extra whatever on the other side of the stage or whatever that is, the accommodation for a day when all you can mentally handle is getting out there and saying your lines is maybe, like, when I come off stage, like, normally we, like, have a banter or I go sit down and play on my phone or whatever. Like, today I need you to, like, leave me alone or come and, like, touch my shoulder and, like, smile at me and give me a thumbs up and see if I need some water. But today is not the day that we're, like, checking in and talking about sports scores or something. Yeah. Like, today is a day where all I can mentally handle is just doing what I'm being paid here to do, and then I'm going to go home and I'm going to crash.
Yeah.
And that's no different than somebody that has the flu that's doing a show.
It's so true.
Yeah, we were doing a Christmas Carol, and the Ghost of Christmas Past broke her arm in the middle of the run.
Oh, no.
And so they made a sling out of the same red velvet as the dress so that it basically, like, did it. And that's like, you know, I'm sure they were wishing she didn't break her arm, but they understood that they had to accommodate what happened and let it happen. And I think, I feel like a lot of times with any sort of mental issue, it's rather than accommodating, they're like, well, I wish you wouldn't do that.
Yeah, we got to deal with so-and-so who's being a nervous Nelly today, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And that was something, I mean, you know, I say my parents have been saints in helping me through this my whole life. And that was, it's a metaphor that many people use, but my mom used to say to me a lot, is it's like no different than being a diabetic. Mm-hmm. Like a diabetic has to stop and take their insulin. They have to physically check in with themselves and see where they are, and they need to monitor their health. And she said, you're no different.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Taking your medication every day to keep your serotonin levels right is no different than taking insulin to keep your blood sugar right.
It's so true.
I think in theater, especially in universities, they're trying to teach students that there's some kind of like ideal personality that you need to have.
Yes. You need to walk in smiling so they want to work with you again.
Eye contact, and you need to like never cry. Mm-hmm. And you need to be available at all times.
You don't want
to
be too high maintenance and too demanding.
Mm-hmm. People are different, and we need to accept that. And that's interesting because, so we're all at the SPAM conference right now in Chicago, and we just had this workshop discussing different personalities.
For sure.
And we broke up into different groups and asking each other's, okay, when I ask somebody of your personality, what do I need from you? And you look at me and say, oh, whatever the show needs. And that's not, you know, that's not the actual answer that you're looking for. And we were asking these different personalities, and somebody who was on the receiving end of that question said, I just need a moment to think of what I need. I need you to give me a little bit of time to come up with an answer. Mm-hmm. And the other person's like, well, I don't understand. I just have that answer.
Yeah, you need what you need. But
and it's
everybody's brain is different.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. And it's so weird that we forget that.
Yeah.
We think, no, this is the personality of this.
Mm-hmm. You're expecting everybody to share your personality, and if they don't respond to your questions in a way that you would have responded, you think there's something
wrong with them
as opposed to...
Yeah. Yeah. We have this idealized theater person, right? And, and this idealized public personality or whatever. And it goes back to that, this mantra that we're told the show must go on. And it's like, well, the show's not going to go on if the lead actor breaks his leg that night. So like, again, like, or they figure it out.
Yeah.
And going back to that whole like physical versus mental health thing, as people who work as freelancers or without quality, high levels of healthcare, In the U.S. and also in Canada, like I have the Canadian free healthcare, which just covers your general primary doctor. It doesn't cover your medication costs. Mm. So I have extra insurance through the union, but I'm still paying 50% if I go to a psychiatrist or a social worker or to therapy. I'm still paying 50% of the cost of a medication I take every day. And I recognize that I'm privileged in being able to do that because I have a full-time year-round union membership that I pay for. And because I'm in a country that I can go to my general doctor and say, like, I need a medication adjustment. And either she does that and that consultation is free, or then she sends me on a referral and I may be waiting for weeks, or if it's an emergency, which I did have a couple of years ago, like I had a really low period where my medication, like I've maybe been on 5 different medications over the years because at some point it becomes not effective anymore.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I have to go through the whole messy mess of switching to something new and seeing if that works.
That's triggering in itself.
Yeah. And you're just trying to maintain your like day-to-day life while it's a lot of work and mm-hmm. we're working, hours that are not normal. Right. So then you have the fear of going to your boss and saying like, I have a noon appointment today that I have to go to because mm-hmm. it's the only appointment I got and I've been waiting 3 months for it.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm sorry, we're in tech. I'll be as fast as I can. Text me, but I gotta go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is important. This priority.
Yeah. And I'm lucky to work in a place that's fine, but I understand that there are a lot of theater companies that would be like, no, you need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I, been very lucky thus far on having people very understanding. And about, I think the past year, I've been more communicative with it and going into work and saying, I am not having a good day.
Yeah.
If I snap, I do not mean to. I am not trying to be rude. I'm not trying to be unprofessional or, you know, disrespectful. It's just right now my brain, just speaking to another person right now is not working.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are times where I've told my boss and coworkers, said, if you notice a mood shift in me, tell me. Because sometimes I don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't be a butthead about it. You know, be nice about it.
No, you're suddenly not very cool. What's going on over there? Yeah.
But there have been times where my boss would be, Ashley, you are speaking a mile a minute. You are not focused. Are you okay? And then you're like, oh, I need to take a moment to kind of like reevaluate my head and just meditate for a second to kind of try to calm down. But just having an open line of communication with whoever you're working with or any relationship you have with anybody really on this front is so, so important to mm-hmm. helping you. Like mm-hmm. that's a tool to help you succeed in it.
And even if you're not like, so for me, I'm a supervisor, right? I'm the head of a department,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which in the dynamic of things, like that can be uncomfortable mm-hmm. saying like, hey, like I'm having a crappy day when I'm real anxious. So like if I disappear for a while, it's because I'm like sitting in the bathroom wondering why my stomach wants to fall out of my mouth. So I don't often say that mm-hmm. unless it's sort of one-on-one with somebody I've worked with for a while.
Yeah.
But what I do is like I sort of use coded language to sort of, for me, one of the things that I find really stressful and really anxious inducing about my work is teaching. Because mm-hmm. I had no aspirations to be a teacher, right? And so I work at a theater that highly values training.
Mm-hmm.
So I have high school students and I have apprentices in. And what I say to them is like, guys, part of this job is that you're asked to be an expert in a hell of a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Every show I'm asked to be an expert in something I'm not an expert in. So I'm telling you right now that I don't want you to think that I know everything mm-hmm. because I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't tell you something, or if I have, because one of the things for me that I've always really struggled with is letting people know that I don't know what's going on. And it goes back to that whole, I have mm-hmm. to know all the information about everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we're in a project and I need to like sit down and talk through it with you, because I also don't know how to solve it, like I need you to know that that is going to be how this job works for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're all going to sit in a circle and brainstorm how to karate chop a bench in half most effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I started out in this thinking, and that's why I look back on my apprenticeship and say like, man, they were saints. It's like, I thought that they knew everything. Right. Mm-hmm. And I had to pretend that I knew everything. So I did a lot of like hiding and like trying to like solve problems without asking questions
mm-hmm.
because I was very afraid of like them being like, oh, she's never going to make it. She has no idea what she's doing. That's the point of an apprenticeship mm-hmm. is to ask questions. And that's what I say to these students. I'm like, guys, you can literally ask me the same question 100 times because I'm not an expert. You're not an expert. Like none of us are mm-hmm. experts. You mm-hmm. can do this for 45 years and you're still gonna, and that's why we have this props group. It's like, we're still going to ask each other questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no point in like making ourselves sick over like trying to solve everything here, right?
Yeah.
So like that's the language I use with them to say like, I'm incredibly uncomfortable mm-hmm. with everything that's happening. And like, so I'm going to diffuse it by telling you guys, like, just like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So like, here we go.
Yeah. So true. Have you been in a situation where there, you were triggered, there was a, the anxiety was higher than it should be, and your coworkers, employer, or employees were not understanding?
I think anytime I've ever been open about it, that it hasn't been a problem, right? So like, it's only when I like will, you know, leave and disappear and come back, it's like, well, where have you been? It's like, oh, I was just downstairs.
Yeah, like, it's like when you don't,
like when you don't say like, oh, like I'm like, and sometimes I'll be like, oh, my stomach's really upset. Like, I don't say it's because I'm anxious. It's just like, it's like, let's not talk about this. I was in the bathroom for 4 hours, like whatever, you know, like, and then it's a physical problem and they're like, oh, okay, well, like, let me know if you need a Tylenol or whatever. And it's like, well, okay, it's fine. You know, and then I breathe and I go back to my work or whatever. But anytime I've been open about it, it's been like, okay, so what can we do to like make this work?
That's great. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've tried to be, and unfortunately I usually let it get to the point where like I'm starting to become physically incapable of doing it. And that's when I have to say like, here's the deal. I'm in the middle of a medication switch, or I have all these appointments because I'm trying to figure out what the heck's going on. I'm going to do this to the best of my ability, but like, I'm going to need to not be here on Friday. And I want you to know that if I come up here and say like, I need to sit with you and talk through this, like, this is why. But I have never gone early enough where it hasn't, like, it hasn't been a necessity, you know? But like, you know, I'm at the point where I know at the beginning of every season, I work with a group of high school students, and that, as amazing as that experience is and how fun that experience is, like, it always will trigger anxiety in me.
Yeah.
And I have been very clear with my bosses and my coworkers that like, this is something I find extremely uncomfortable. I love it. And I think what they get out of it is incredible, but it will always be stressful for me.
Yeah.
And what I've gotten back from a lot of them is like, it ain't no picnic for us either. Like we don't work in a school setting. So none of us really had the ambition, frankly, to teach. Like, we went into the solo professional side of things. None of us went into the, like, the teaching side of things. So we don't have any teaching training. And like, we never expected to do this, and we love it. But for a lot of us, it's very stressful.
Yeah.
And that's great to like, when I express that, to get that back from them, like, yeah. Every year I'm like, oh my God, they're all staring at me. How do I teach somebody who can barely use a screw gun to build a bed? But it's like, okay, well, we're going to figure it out.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're never going to fix that. You're just going to have to deal with
it. Yeah. I know that, like,
how to deal with it.
Yeah. I'll never be truly comfortable with it. But that's no different than like, I know I'm never going to be truly comfortable with running.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I do it because, like, it's good for me or it's good for my body, but, like, I'm never going to love it.
Yeah.
I'm never going to, like, really want to do it. But when I do it, it's like, and when I do it, like, I have a great time with these students and I'm like, man, I'm spread the gospel of the prom. And, like, whatever, you know, and if it changes their mind or they become theater goers later or they pursue something creative, like, it's like, awesome. I was part of that. So, like, in some ways it's worth it, but, you know, I will always struggle with it.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to the point where, you know, it's been, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's like, okay, here we go. That's why I'm feeling a little bizarre. It's starting again.
Yeah. That's always so interesting when I start to get very anxious about not hearing back from somebody or something. And you know it's the silliest thing.
Yeah.
It does not
probably
matter.
Probably on the subway or something.
They're in tech or something. But I just start freaking out. And then I have to realize, okay, Ashley, this is why you're freaking out. You know the logistics of this. And trying to, like, fact by fact go through and be like, okay, this is not as extreme as your brain is telling you.
Yeah, I tend to spiral into thinking I don't have as much time as I have. So I tend to make a lot of lists. And then evaluate, like, I'll complete one thing in the list and I'll look and it's only been 15 minutes. And I was like, in my brain when I woke up this morning, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not even gonna get that done by lunch, whatever. You know, and I'm so much faster than I think I am, but I get into this spiral of like, oh my God, I don't have enough time. I have all these things to do. And they're all in my brain. I'm not organizing them in any way. So I have to put them all down on paper. And I know that about myself now.
Well, we have actually reached the end of this episode. That went by very quickly.
Many things to talk about.
So much and so many important things to talk about. I'm very happy that you were able to sit down with us and discuss all of this.
So early in the morning.
I know. It is quite early, guys.
I'm awake now. I'm ready to drive back to Canada. Put my coffee in me.
I'm like, and I got to go on a plane and maybe I'll go to sleep. Well, guys, this has been Silk Flowers and
Paper Mache Hearts. I'm your host, Eric Hart.
I'm your host, Ashley Flowers, and we've been with
Natalie Kearns.
Make sure to check us out on Twitter at Silk Mache. You can send us an email with questions or thoughts or ideas that you would like us to talk about at propspodcast@gmail.com.
You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play or check out our website at silkflowersandpapermachehearts.com.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.